Welcome back, and thanks for listening to the Coach's Playbook podcast. On today's show, we have assistant coach Jamie Givens from Belmont University. Coach Givens has done nothing but help his Bruins to a run of dominance in the OVC by claiming the three previous conference championships in dominating fashion. We talk about defending the three-point line, creating a blob offensive package, and great nuggets for assistant coaches. Hope you enjoy. We are very fortunate to have OVC powerhouse Belmont's assistant coach Jamie Givens on today's episode. In his last 4 years at Belmont, Givens has been a part of three consecutive OVC championships, three straight NCAA tournament appearances, and has helped Belmont to a 66-4 record in OVC play coming into this year. Coach Givens, thanks for joining the show.
Glad to be here, Wyatt.
Coach, I'm a real big believer in how you do one thing is how you do everything. I think from a professional standpoint, it's that way. I think from a player standpoint, you know, when it comes to their classroom and all that, and then on the floor, how they do one thing usually kind of tells you what they're about. And I'll just be honest, I was blown away with how thorough you were in your preparation for the podcast. I mean, you know, you wanted to get some feedback on some talking points, and it was just really impressive to me. And, you know, we've got a relationship, but, you know, just to kind of see it from a professional standpoint like that, it really shows why you're successful in a lot of areas. So, you know, a small pat on the back for me for what it's worth, not much, but I just really, really blown away. And, you know, that was pretty awesome.
No, I appreciate it. Part of that is probably just that, you know, I've been chasing around two little princesses. I have a almost three-year-old and a six-month-old for the last 6 weeks. So when I get a chance to talk ball, I got pretty excited. My wife was looking at me a little crazy last night because I was over, you know, typing on my computer, and she's like, what are you working on? I was like, man, I'm talking basketball with Coach Faust tomorrow, and I'm pretty excited about it. So a lot of that was quarantine related.
We'll take it how we can get it. That's all right. You know, a lot of today's game, you know, it's spread people out. It's drive and kick. I think the teams that are the most, you know, the most dangerous, the hardest to guard, those guys that can do that and do it well. You know, the three ball is such a huge part of teams' offenses. You know, one thing that was extremely impressive, you know, is you guys were in the 96th percentile of all Division I schools defensively. And that's looking at it from a point per possession standpoint, which is probably the most fair way to compare teams defensively since pace is so different depending on what style you play. So basically to be up in the 95th plus percentile points per possession, that's pretty impressive. And I think, you know, you guys were particularly adept at defending the 3-point line. You know, is this by design that you guard the perimeter so well, or, you know, is this just kind of a byproduct of good defense overall? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge point of emphasis for sure. And, you know, you referenced the numbers, and, you know, there's no doubt, you know, from the NBA level, you know, down through our level for sure, that it's just such a efficient shot. You know, a catch and shoot three is going to be your highest points for possession, you know, right behind free throws and uncontested layups. And so, you know, we built our defense around forcing tough twos. And, you know, I think a huge part of our success was, you know, we have great players, first of all, that really bought into our system. But, you know, we build inside to out, and, you know, our length and size kind of have allowed us to be really, really good paint protectors on the perimeter, keeping the ball in front of us. And then that's translated into, you know, some success at forcing people to take harder shots, contested jumpers. And, you know, we work really, really hard to keep the ball in front of us. I mean, we're a help-oriented, gap-oriented team. You know, like I said, we started, I think, four players that were 6 foot or taller. You know, so I think that was one of the big things that helped us be such a stingy defensive team was our size. But then I think our system, along with some scouting and preparation, really helped us guard the three-point line. You know, a big part of what we do every day in practice is just emphasizing help choices. And, you know, hey, do you need to help there? You know, did you stop the drive? If you stop the drive, you know, what was that guy really going to do? A contested two, a contested pull up, even a contested post, you know, post up is usually going to be a long-term worse shot than, people getting open threes. And, you know, at our level, at every level, open feet set threes over and over and over are going to beat you because teams are going to make enough of those. And if you want to see what that looks like, just watch our SEMO tape from the OVC tournament when they made 14 on us. And just about every single one of them was open. you know, I think one of the things our staff and Coach Bart, you know, from the top, you know, challenges our team to guard the basketball. The ball beats you. Your man doesn't beat you. The ball beats you. The ball scores, and that kind of trickles down through everything. And you know, you're not going to prevent a team from taking shots. They're going to get shots, but you know, with your scheme and your kids, you know, ability to execute your scheme, you can dictate, you know, what shots people are getting at, you know, at least at some level. So yeah. I don't know if that was a little bit of a rambling answer, but.
No, that's good stuff. And, you know, talking about containing the basketball, I think, and you talk about building from inside out. I think one thing I see a lot of teams doing is whether they consciously build outside in, they get so consumed with wanting to pressure the basketball. They're willing to compromise some things that make your offense a little bit better, I think. What do you do? You know, we've been a pack line team for a long time, and containing the basketball is huge, but what do you do? Are there specific things, you know, I'm talking, are there drills you do? Are there terminology you use? You know, do you give your kids permission to, you know, not get beat? Do you send kids middle? Do you send left? You know, what all goes into, because it's such a simple thing, contain the basketball, but if you do it well, you're going to be a good defensive team. So can you just elaborate, you know, a little bit more on just containing the basketball?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think at our level, it's really, really hard to pressure the basketball consistently, especially outside the 3-point line. Like you said, everybody's got the floor spaced. Everybody has really good athletes and really good skill. And I think unless you're, you know, Vic Schaefer, Mississippi State, who just, you know, has made a living, you know, dogging the basketball, I think it's really hard at our level to really extend and pressure. I think key number one, though, honestly, is what fits your personnel. You know, there's different ways to guard. There's different ways to contain the basketball. And for us, you know, we have size and length, so we're not going to overextend ourselves and really get way out and give the ball heat. You know, we might be a step off and use our length. And then, you know, we are gap oriented. We drill it a couple different ways. You know, so much of it is just moving on the fly to the ball, you know, knowing where to be. And then we rep it and break it down in different ways. We don't send the ball one way or the other. I've been around different people who you know, some send it middle, some send it baseline. We just try to keep the ball in front. And then we have a little more flexibility and freedom on the back end as far as our help rotations. We give our big permission to rotate and contain a drive. You know, we're never going to help up the lane on a middle drive, but we can help over. And then, you know, we got to be really sharp with our cover down and cover across. But, you know, we'll drill it, you know, 4v4. We'll drill it in, you know, two person breakdowns where we might have, you know, the guards, we might have, you know, a guy on the top of the key and a guy on the wing. The ball's going to turn and they're going to jump to the gap. And then, you know, we'll turn it back or skip it. And then it's just close out and play 2-on-2 in a gap. But, you know, there's a variety of different ways to do it. But I think the most important thing is, number one, what you're emphasizing every day. But number two, just the simplicity that you got five people loaded the ball no matter where the ball is. And I think it's really tempting to be, you know, person-oriented or matchup-oriented. But we try to really, really emphasize every single day that it's all five people's job to guard the basketball wherever the ball is. And, you know, the repetition of seeing ball in man and moving on the fly to the ball is going to give them that skill. But ultimately, if they know we're trying to, you know, these are the shots we're willing to live with, we're trying to contest every shot, I think it frees them up a little bit to move around and play.
So, you know, I think, you know, being a gap-oriented team, when you're containing the basketball, you know, teams that are just, you know, try to isolate and a lot of drive and kick, I think you can have some success against those guys. I've always felt like the hardest things to handle were teams that were really good with their screening actions, that had, you know, multiple screening actions, or just kind of kept you having to figure that piece out. Do you guys see that a lot? And when you do, how do you handle that? Will you guys switch? Will you not? Will you mix it up? And who is that on? Is that on the players? Do you have certain calls? How do you guys handle that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And honestly, our league is really versatile, and we see a lot of both. We see a lot of teams that are going to just space you and drive you. And then, you know, we see teams that are going to really screen and really ball screen. And, you know, I think one thing I love that Coach Bart, our head coach, does is we spend at least probably 2 or 3 weeks in our preseason practice having studied, you know, our non-conference opponents and obviously knowing our league really well, where we're going to rep and work on ways to guard every screening action we're going to see. So whether it's a, you know, a typical cross screen down screen or a, you know, a diagonal back screen and then a cleanup screen or flare screens or, you know, wide pin downs or, you know, block to wing pin down, we're going to give our kids answers for everything that we're going to see and kind of build our toolbox, if you will. And then as the year goes, you know, we might see, you know, a certain personnel grouping that calls for us to guard a stagger, you know, by locking and trailing and, or shooting the gap or whatever it may be, whatever your terminology is. But ultimately, whatever our, you know, our preferred way of guarding something, we give our kids the flexibility to try to get it covered up. And we end up switching, more this year than we have in the past. And a lot of that is personnel driven. But I think having the flexibility to switch and not just say, this is how we're guarding a down screen every single time, no matter what, has given our kids, like I said, the freedom to just try to recover, try to get there, try to cover it up. And then, you know, one thing that we've had to, I think grow at as a program, and it starts with our players, is being able to just talk their way through it and figure it out on their own. And, you know, as a younger coach, you want to control every single rep. But if you think about it, the amount of things that your team has to cover up and scramble through each defensive possession and then over the course of the game, that's one thing that Bart just does a really good job of equipping our kids to get the job done themselves. And that's through practice reps, you know, maybe not blowing the whistle every single time, maybe saying, hey, we're going to work 2-on-2 pin downs here. You know, hey, we're going to try it. Let's lock and trail this kid. Let's not give up a three to, you know, this player on the scout team or, you know, whoever they're going against, but otherwise not give them too many rules and then just try to work really hard to force a contested shot. Because, you know, if we're evaluating our games defensively, it's what we win when we take them, take a lot of contested shots. We lose when teams get uncontested shots. And that's kind of just the 30,000 feet macro view of we're gonna try to force tough twos. We're not giving up layups. We're not fouling them. We're not giving up open threes. And then giving them a lot of different ways that they can then go out and execute that.
That's really good. Yeah, it seems like you're setting your kids up for success challenging them to guard things, you know, guard a different kid a different way. So, you know, they may do the same action on each side of the floor, but with this kid, we'll do this. I think so many people are afraid to challenge their kids, or they're afraid their kids just can't do that. Hey, we've got to do it this way. That I think we lock ourselves in at times. And so I think that's just an awesome thing. And it's blown me away how much my players have been able to kind of rise to the occasion and have been able to execute things that you may think, you know, well, that's too tough of an ask. Well, you know, let's put them in a position to succeed and see if they can. And it seems like that's really worked for you guys offensively. So that's awesome to hear.
Yeah, I think it goes back to, you know, Bart tells our team all the time, you just got to make them miss by an inch. You know, you're not going to play perfect defense every possession. You just got to make them miss by an inch. And I think that gives our team a little freedom and a little more juice to compete and just try to make a miss. You know, it's not, we're going out to execute a coverage perfectly or to, you know, like I said, guard a down screen perfectly every single time. You're just trying to make a miss by an inch. And I think that gives them the freedom. They're not having to look over the shoulder if they guard a down screen, if they shoot a gap when they're supposed to trail on a kid that makes threes. If you get it covered up and if you contest a shot, you know, we're going to live with it. We're going to trust you to go out and get the job done.
That's awesome. That's huge for your players too, to know they, you know, they have the confidence to make a mistake. That's pretty good. Something you mentioned when we were talking, and I really like this. I think this even more so at our level, but clearly, you know, you think it works at your level. You mentioned you're not going to win a lot of games when their studs get to do what they do well. I think at our level, the number one way that you can steal wins and you can upset people and do some things is by cutting the head off the snake. And, you know, kind of how do you guys, how does that look at your level? And maybe that can be even amplified for high school coaches who are listening in.
Yeah. And sometimes it depends on the snake you're playing, because if you look at some of our scores this year, we didn't do a very good job of it. You know, a lot of it starts in our preparation. You know, obviously there's a lot of film study and scouting that goes on at our level. And, you know, you know where, you know, certain kids that you're getting ready to play are just dominant. And, you know, to give you an example, you know, we're prepping to play Arkansas, and Chelsea Dungy is one of the best players in the country. I mean, she's just so good at going left. And, you know, so we had a lot of stuff that we're going to switch to their dribble drive, and we're going to find her early in transition. And you have these great plans, and then the kid still gets left whenever she wants and gets the free throw line and makes threes. And, you know, so it's not always successful, but I think ultimately in your prep, you got to make as many of their kids do the second, third, fourth things they do well, over and over and over to beat you. And, you know, so if we're playing a kid that we know is a dominant 3-point shooter, they're going to make a ton of threes off screens. You know, they're going to make threes off ball screens. They're going to make threes in transition. And that's obviously something we're going to really harp on in our preparation, that we're going to do whatever we have to do to be in that kid's shorts on every catch. And we're going to overplay. Yeah, we might really extend and get out beyond the 3-point line. And we don't really care what they're going to do from 2-point land. If it's a kid that's really good from three, we're going to live with whatever they do off the bounce, because we're not going to give that kid threes. And that's, you know, that goes back to numbers. If it's a kid that, you know, we know is dominant at going left to get to a pull up, you know, we've found in film study, you know, KK Wright, we played earlier this year. Great player at Central Florida. I think second team honorable All-American 2 years ago, 20 points a game. I mean, she's going to play pro for a really long time. You know, you study her numbers, you study what she does well, and it's just the simplicity of, she's just better going left. She's more productive going left. So we're not going to let that kid go left and beat us. We're going to make her do something to the other side of her body. And then again, it's you don't have to shut the kid out, but we're going to live with her doing something that isn't her favorite thing to do. I think at the high school level, I think that could be sending a kid a direction, you know, off the bounce. I think you could be, you know, not letting a post player catch in a certain place. You know, you're going to send a second body at him no matter what, on the catch, on the dribble. You know, if it's a pick and pop shooter, like, we're going to adjust how we play ball screens and not let them get a pop three. And, you know, if a kid turns a corner on us and gets a layup because we were concerned about the pop, then we're going to live with that, because we weren't going to give their pick and pop shooter a three. Again, that goes back to, you got to have faith that over the course of a 40-minute game, 36-minute game, that guys doing their second, third, fourth best thing, or their third, fourth, fifth most productive player, aren't going to beat you over the course of a game.
That sounds like a formula to be a 95th percentile defensive team to me, Coach. So that's some good stuff. Let's kind of shift gears and talk about based on out of bounds offense. Again, this was another area where you guys were, unbelievably efficient as far as, you know, how you stack up against everyone else. And I was on Synergy and kind of watching what you guys do. And I mean, you guys screen and screen and screen. And there was one possession, there was about six screens. It looks like, you know, you're trying to get a three off and there's just a deep post ISO and it's a layup. And, you know, it's, I feel like for your level to score on based on out of bounds, you know, is pretty difficult because of the extensive scouting and the time people have to put into these things. So, you know, how do you guys attack based on out of bounds offense? You know, is it a product of, hey, we just have good plays, we score on them, or do you put some time into really being really good at them, or how does that shake out?
Yeah, I think that's everything you just said is a really, really, you know, it's a big testament to, number one, our players being able to go out and execute, and, you know, number two, the simplicity in which simplicity, but maybe complexity at the same time, that Bart kind of goes about doing it. And, you know, I think based on the bounds is a really, really good time to get a specific shot for a specific kid. You know, I love Amanda Butler at Clemson. I think she does a really good job. She calls it special teams. If you're a football guy, I think it makes a lot of sense that there can be a nice 10-point swing based on a bounce if you do it really well offensively and if you guard it really well defensively. And, you know, so we've taken the approach the last couple of years. We've done it differently here and there, but this year we really honed in on running everything out of the same formation. And we try to align our personnel as much as possible. And, you know, even with all the scouting, you know, you still got to go out there and guard it. And I think in my experience, and Wyatt, tell me if this is different in what you've seen, but I feel like based on about defense is more predictable than just about anything you're going to face throughout the course of a game. You know, most people have a pretty specific way that they're going to guard based on the bounds. They're going to stick with every screen. They're not going to switch anything. Their inbounder is either going to be a big helper under the rim or they're going to be attached to the inbounder. And then, you know, we kind of go from there in our individual game prep. We got the law speeding by. You know, we try to spend a good amount of time in our practices or in our preseason prep, kind of building and layering our different options based on the bounds. And then once we get in season, we usually do maybe like a one or two days a week. We'll do a 5-minute cutthroat segment with our, you know, our first group and second group playing up against each other, and they'll just make a call, huddle and make a call. And if they score, they stay. And, you know, obviously our kids know what's coming. They run the same stuff. So it gives them, you know, a pretty good look of how people are going to defend it, you know, even if they know something's coming. And then it gives our players a good chance to kind of feel the progressions. And I think that's a big reason we're successful is, you know, you got the ball right at your rim. So you got to put pressure on defense to protect the rim first. You got to make them take away your layups. And teams that can't take away a layup, if they can't guard a back screen or if they can't guard, you know, multiple screening actions, you're going to get 2 points because the ball is, again, it's right at your basket. And then teams that can take all that stuff away or have to send a second body at it to take it away, then you're going to get something else. So, you know, I'm a big believer in try to get a layup. And if you can't get a layup, you know, leverage how the team's protecting their basket to get something else. You know, so we do a variety of different things that are based on the bounds. And it usually starts like that. Can we get a layup? And then, all right, can we get a three out of that? Or, you know, can we, you know, put our two best players in a, you know, empty side ball screen, you know, because you're worried about our inbounder coming off stagger, or, you know, or, you know, we have a 6'4" post player on our team. That, you know, it got to the point where pretty late in the year, it's like, all right, we're just going to back screen her to the rim. And, you know, what are you going to do with it? You're going to switch it. Okay. Then you got a little guy. If you don't switch it, she's going to have a, you know, a little bit of separation. And it's just hard to guard again, because it's right at the rim.
Yeah. And I agree 100%. I think it is. I think, you know, based on a bounds D is the most predictable time. I think it's an area, you know, I mean, it's to the point where I go into games with the first, you know, two or three based on a bounds plays, you know, that we know, okay, you know, we should be able to score on this. We know how they've guarded it. For some reason, teams just don't change what they do or how they guard actions. And it was to the point in a win or go home game in the fourth quarter, we were struggling to score. So we just had our kids drive to the baseline as hard as they could. We just took a timeout. And we ended up scoring and never trailed. So there's times where I'm more confident in our being able to score on a base out of bounds play than I am in the half court. So I agree completely with you there. One area I know you're passionate about. I've asked every single college coach that's been on the show, do they think the high school needs a shot clock? And every single one said yes. I've asked a lot of high school coaches, and the high school coaches are a resounding no to the shot clock. So convince us, give us a reason why we shouldn't be able to hold it if we daggum want to.
You're gonna put the weight of this debate onto my shoulders right now and say that I have to be the convincer. Is that where that's where we just went?
Good luck.
You're gonna make me do it.
That's where we're at, man.
I think it would be a short-term hard adjustment, because for all the right, you know, all the right arguments of, you know, playing faster equals more turnovers if you're not as skilled or if you don't have as capable players and ball handlers. But over time, the game isn't meant to be a possession game. The game is meant to be, can you score? Can you keep the other team from scoring? And, you know, over the course of 40 minutes, you know, I think that's going to figure itself out, or 36 minutes. And, you know, I think it's tricky. And I know people have their reasons for it, but ultimately there's a reason there's a shot clock in every gym around the world, other than, you know, a handful of high schools here, and I'm sure other places. And it's because the game was designed not to see who can hold possession the longest. And you know, there's a time and place for being wise with how you manage the clock. And there's a time and place for, you know, being, again, strategic down the stretch of a game. But, you know, I think that it's going to, in a 3 to 5 year window, it's going to improve. It'll improve skill across the board. It'll improve scoring across the board. And then that's going to, in turn, make our players more prepared to come and play, at, you know, in our level, and then, you know, at the professional level as well.
It's interesting, and I'm not entirely opposed to it. But when I've gone back and checked games, I go back and I look, and very rarely in the course of a game would there have even been a shot clock violation, assuming it's 30 seconds plus. I think teams are so impatient or don't run much offense that most teams shoot in that early window. I do think it would make the biggest impact late game. And, you know, but I think at the end of the day, the best coaches are going to adjust. So, you know, it is what it is, but I don't know if you've convinced everybody, but that was a good step in the right direction, I think. We've got a couple more minutes. I want to hit on, real quickly, you know, being a really good assistant coach. I think when I was an assistant coach, every clinic I went to, I felt like everything I went to was geared towards running a program or being a head coach. And I'm constantly like, man, but I want to get better now. You know, I want to be better. So, you know, how does it, you know, how can you just be the best assistant coach and also at the same time prepare to be a head coach?
Yeah. And I don't know that I'm the authority on that, but I think some things that have been helpful for me is, and I'm going to really try to avoid using some of the cliches I always hear, but ultimately just taking full ownership and responsibility of what you've been put in charge of. And, you know, I literally exist to help Bart, you know, give our players a great experience on and off the floor. And so, you know, whatever he's got me in charge of, I need to be, he kind of says, you be the head coach of that area, and take, again, full ownership and responsibility of being really, really good and being really good in those spots. And, you know, it's no different than, you know, the different roles on a team, you know, being a great screener, or being a great playmaker, or being a great, you know, defensive stopper. And, you know, there's a lot of skill and technique that goes into the various aspects of running a program. And, you know, I think one of the best things I've ever heard at a Final Four at a convention was Vic Schaefer, you know, talking about, you get paid to get it right. Like, you literally get paid to get it right. You don't get paid to have a suggestion. You don't get paid to think you might know an answer to something. You get paid to get it right. And I think being a great assistant coach is putting the time in to get it right, whether that's film study or player development or having relationships with the people, you know, around your program, your booster clubs, or, you know, marketing folks or ticket folks or whoever it may be. But, you know, it's really easy to identify problems. And I think teams that get a lot done have people that can be problem solvers and provide solutions. And I think the last thing that is just totally key is just as an assistant coach is being a bridge builder to your players. You got to be the ones that help get them onto your team and get them into your boat. And, you know, the best teams have everyone moving in the same direction and everybody sacrificing their agenda, their individual agendas for the team agenda. And assistant coaches just play a huge role in helping that happen.
That's all very good practical stuff, Coach. And I appreciate it. We're going to move on to the last segment here. We're going to throw the full court press on you. So you have about 10 seconds or less to answer each question. All right.
Ready for it.
All right. If you're up three late in the game with 8 seconds, are you fouling or playing it out?
I'm going to play it out. I think that with the fact that you can advance the ball, it's going to give them two possessions and two pretty good shots.
All right. Favorite OVC gym to coach in aside from your own?
Oh, I say this with a little, with the hair on the back of my neck standing up, but it's got to be at Martin. just because they got great fans, they're a great team, and you're going to get them at their best at their place. And, you know, you got to beat those guys if you want to win our league.
There's also a really good milkshake in Martin, Tennessee. Last thing, what's the best hidden food gem in Nashville?
Oh, it's got to be Baja Burrito.
All right, Coach, next time we're down there, we're going to hit up the Baja Burrito. I really appreciate you taking time out to get with us and to share a lot of knowledge, Coach. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Coach Faust.
Anytime.
For Coach Givens, this is Wyatt Faust, and thanks for listening to the Coach's Playbook podcast. Join us again Thursday as Coach Donna Moyer from Sacred Heart joins the show and discusses parents, playing time, and all the tough subjects. Until then, keep getting better.